I'm Fraser Kane, and you're listening to the audio edition of Universe Today. Young hot blue star, the supermassive black hole has spoken. It's time for you to leave the galaxy. When binary stars stray too close to the center of the Milky Way, they're violently split apart. One star is put into an elliptical orbit around the supermassive black hole at the center of the Milky Way, and the other is kicked right out of the galaxy. Dr. Warren Brown from the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics was one of the astronomers who recently turned up two of these exiled stars. Hi, Warren. Welcome to Universe Today.
Hi, Fraser.
Okay, so can you tell me about the stars you observed and how they've come to be kicked out of our galaxy?
So what we discovered were two stars in the far outskirts of the Milky Way that are traveling with speeds that no one has ever really seen for stars in our galaxy, at least stars outside of the galactic center, except that these stars are hundreds of thousands of light years away from the galactic center. And yet the only plausible explanation for their velocity is that they were ejected by the supermassive black hole at the center of the galaxy.
So they strayed too close to the supermassive black hole and were kind of kicked out?
Yeah, so here's the picture. It requires three bodies, and the theorists say that the most likely way it happened is if you have a pair of stars, and as you may be aware, that something like half the stars in the sky are actually systems containing a pair or sometimes more stars. And so if you have a tightly bound pair of stars that for some reason travels too close to the massive black hole, at some point the massive black hole's gravity will exceed the binding energy of the pair of stars, and it'll rip one of those stars away. It'll capture the one star. But the other star then leaves the system with the energy of the orbital energy of the original pair. And so that's how you get this extra boost of velocity, is that the supermassive black hole is able to basically unbind one star, capture it, and leaves the other one with the entire amount of the energy that the pair used to have. And so that star then gets ejected right out of the galaxy.
So then if a regular, like a single star, came too close, it wouldn't have the energy to be ejected. It would just sort of, because I think I've seen some simulations where a star gets too close to the black hole and kind of, you know, changes the direction of its orbit, but it still kind of is continuing to orbit around.
Sure. You could imagine, like the spacecraft gets slingshotted around Jupiter or something. You could imagine that you'd be changing the trajectory and even gaining some speed. But there's no mechanism in the galaxy to gain this much speed for something that, you know, the mass of, in this case, a 3 or 4 solar mass star. That requires a sort of three-body interaction in order to get the sort of the amount of velocity that we see. What we observe is their motion with respect to us, and they're moving away from us at the velocity of about 1 million to 1.5 million miles per hour.
Right. That's just what I was going to ask. How fast it's going? So how fast would the stars have been going when they came in to meet their breakup?
I don't know for sure. Probably something 10 times that right at that moment when they're swinging past the black hole. Of course, as you leave that gravitational potential well of the black hole, they're going to slow down pretty suddenly. But their final escape velocity is what we observe now is of order 1 million miles per hour. And that's well over twice the velocity that you need to escape the gravitational influence of the galaxy altogether. So these stars really are exiles. I mean, they're being outcast from the galaxy, and they'll never return.
And one star is kicked out. Now, you said the other one is. What happens to the other star?
Well, that's an interesting question. And in fact, there's a theory paper that some theorists had written that suggested that these stars on very long elliptical orbits around the central massive black hole might be the former companions to these so-called hypervelocity stars that we've discovered. And that's the sort of orbit you'd expect, that unless the star is so unlucky as to be, as you know, fall straight into the massive black hole, if it just misses just a little bit, it's just going to swing around and be on a very long elliptical orbit around the central massive black hole.
And where did the pair originate? I mean, is this a fate that might, you know, affect some nearby binary stars, or?
Well, and that's actually gets to the bigger picture here, which is, the galactic center is a very interesting place. There's lots of young stars. Three of the youngest massive clusters, star clusters in the galaxy are right near the galactic center, and they contain some of the most massive stars known in the galaxy. So there's lots of young stars orbiting around down there, the question is, how do you get a star tweak its orbit so that it, you know, shoots straight down towards the massive black hole, as opposed just to moving around it like the Earth orbiting the Sun? And that's an open question. And one thing that these hypervelocity stars we've discovered are starting to give us a handle on is maybe how that mechanism works. Because, for example, if one idea is that, well, these young star clusters we observe, perhaps by dynamical friction as they sort of encounter other stars, they can sink slowly down into the galactic center, right into the black hole. And if that were to happen, you could imagine that suddenly you have a whole bunch of stars right in the massive black hole. You could get a burst of these hypervelocity stars. There's all sorts of stars to eject. And yet the stars that we observe all have different travel times from the galactic center. So already, I mean, it's only suggestive, but it's already we're starting to be able to say something about the history of stars interacting with the massive black hole. And it would appear so far that there's no evidence for star clusters falling into the galactic center.
So you're saying, like, there could be some kind of conveyor belt where stars are born and then slowly sink down and then are just kicked out as they get too close?
Yeah, that's sort of one idea. And for that conveyor belt to work, you need to have some sort of massive anchor, like a dense star cluster, for that conveyor to work, to be able to sort of sink something down in its, towards the massive black hole. It's the way that works is as a massive object encounters lots of lesser massive objects, it turns out that it'll scatter less off massive objects and tend to give them a little bit more energy. And as the massive object, in this case a star cluster, loses energy, its orbit slowly decays, you know, gets smaller and closer towards the galactic center.
With the few number of stars that you found and with the number of stars in the galaxy, it must have been a pretty difficult job to track these guys down. What was the method that you used?
Yeah, well, that's actually one exciting results of this. But this time, the first discovery a year ago, when we discovered the first hypervelocity star, it was something of a serendipitous discovery. And this time, we were actively looking for them. And the trick was, is these things ought to be very rare. Theorists estimate there's perhaps 1,000 of these stars in the entire galaxy. And the galaxy contains over 100 billion stars. So we had to look in a way that gave us a pretty good chance of trying to find more of them. And our strategy was twofold. One is that the outskirts of the Milky Way contain mostly old dwarf stars, stars like the Sun or less massive stars. They're red stars. They live a long time. There's no young, you know, blue massive stars. And that's the kind of star that we decided to look for, stars that are young and luminous so we can see them far away, but where there shouldn't be any stars like that in the outskirts of the galaxy. And the other part of the strategy was to look for, I guess I've already said it, but faint stars. The further out you go, the less sort of background of galaxy stars you have to contend with, and the more likely you'll come across one of these hypervelocity stars as opposed just to another galaxy, a star that's orbiting the galaxy.
And what's the method that you'll actually use to tell that the star is moving?
For that, we had to take a spectrum of the star. So using the 6.5-meter MMT telescope in Arizona, we would point the telescope at one of our candidate targets, and we'd take the light of that star and we'd disperse it into a rainbow spectrum, and we'd take a picture of that spectrum. And the elements in the stellar atmosphere serve as a fingerprint. You can see absorption lines due to hydrogen and helium and other elements. And it was using the motions, the Doppler shift, in this case a redshift of those wavelengths, told us how fast those stars are moving away from us. And most of the stars in our sample, I should say, were normal galaxy stars. They were moving sort of small velocities, but two of these happened to be traveling quite fast, and that's the two that we announced just now.
And so what do you think this tells us about the formation of stars or the, you know, the center of the galaxy? Or
well, and that's actually, yeah, that's the interesting story or part of the story, I think, this time around, is now that we have a sample of these are really a class of objects, these hypervelocity stars. We can start to say something about where they come from, which is the galactic center. These stars are actually sort of uniquely suited for telling us the story of what's been happening at the galactic center. Their travel times tell us something about the history of what's been happening, but also the kinds of stars we're seeing, in this case, young blue stars. These are 3 to 4 solar mass stars. Astronomers call them B-type stars. The fact that we've seen two in our survey region, which covered about 5% of the entire sky, is consistent with sort of the average distribution of stars you see in the galaxy, but inconsistent with a lot of these young star clusters you see in the galactic center. So just the fact of the kind of types of stars we're seeing is starting to tell us about, you know, the population of where what's being shot out of the galaxy. In this case, it looks like it's not these sort of supermassive clusters of stars, but rather just your average star that's wandering through the galaxy.
And if you had some kind of super Hubble at your disposal, what would you want to look for?
Oh, we'd want to look for the motion of these stars in the sky. So all we know is their minimum velocity, because the only thing we can measure is their velocity in the line of sight with respect to us. What we don't know is their velocity on the plane of the sky, the so-called proper motion. And to do that, it's possible to do that with Hubble if you have, you know, 3 or 5 year baseline in which to see these stars move. It should be a very small motion. If you had a super Hubble, maybe you could see it in a year. So that would be very interesting to know. Not only that, would that tell you, you know, for sure that these things really are coming from the galactic center and not from someplace else, but also their trajectories. If you knew exactly how they're moving now, any deviation from a straight line out of the galactic center tells you about how the gravity of the galaxy has been affecting their trajectory over time. And that's also very interesting to know.
Right, because I guess would help with, like, even plotting out the distribution of dark matter and stuff like that.
Exactly, exactly. So one thing that, you know, so astronomers infer the presence of dark matter. We see stars orbiting the galaxy faster than they should be, just because, well, there appears to be mass that we can't account for holding them in their orbits. And this dark matter, it's hard to get a handle on how it's distributed around the galaxy, but these stars are already at the outskirts of the galaxy, and as they pass through it, this perturbation, this gravitational pull of this dark matter as these things travel through the galaxy sort of slowly adds up to change their trajectory. So they're actually measuring sort of the distribution of this dark matter just on their, you know, on their orbit. So if you could measure the motions for the sample of stars, it actually starts giving you a handle on how the dark matter is distributed in our galaxy.
Well, it sounds like there's some fascinating research ahead. Dr. Brown, thank you for taking the time to speak with me today.
Well, thank you, Fraser.
Dr. Warren Brown spoke to me from his office at the Harvard-Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Now, you can get more space and astronomy news from my website at universetoday.com. You can also send me any comments, questions, or feedback to info@universetoday.com. And I'm also proud to announce our new What's Up 2006 book, 365 Days of Skywatching. This is a freely downloadable 400-plus page book that gives you suggestions on what to see in the night sky for every day in 2006. You can download it free by going to universetoday.com/whatsup. Thanks for listening.